Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, Mount Zion, the 12th Hour, in the Elgin, Texas. Today is March the 30th, 2024, or the second day of Abib 2029. We will start our first service today, taken from the book of the White House Recruiter of E.T. Hallam. So we're going to pick up on page one. It says that, never did the clouds of war so strange and so dark hang an angry thunderhead over the world, and never did the world see itself as it does today. Everywhere in the government, in industry, in halls of learning, in churches, in homes, on the streets, in every walk of life, the question uppermost in whither-bound mankind. From the preeminent scientific and journalistic spokesman come such representative utterances as these. What is the story of man? It is that men die, man survives. Now men are necessarily are measurably near the most terrible of all the climaxes they have brought upon themselves in the long history of the struggle. If the climax comes, it will change life and change the world. But it will not end life. It will not destroy the world. In this utmost climax, or perhaps in its prospect, men may at last find the secret of peace and a way to live without destruction. That is a hope. The certainty is that man will be on the earth making a world. And that's taken from Life, October the 3rd, 1949, page 22. For the Einstein agrees that other nations can rediscover our secret processes by themselves, that the military defense can be expected and prepared. Preparedness is futile. That if another war breaks out, atom bombs will surely destroy the civilization. It is important, he went on to say, to enlighten public opinion on the real situation about the bomb. Only the prevention of war by action on an international scale, which will make preparation for war unnecessary and even impossible, can save us from the consequences. Newsweek, March the 10th, 1947, page 58. History in large areas of the world has been rolled back. Fanaticism has replaced reason. Terror, compromise, hate, friendship, science, been perverted, distorted, and retooled into weapons against civilization. John Edgar Hoover, in a report sent out by the Federal Bureau of Investigation, said that for the First World War was a decided shock to the earlier period of the optimism. Today the shock is almost incredibly greater. Insecurity and strife are the general, that the prevailing attitude is one of anxious and pessimistic uncertainty, John Dewey, Reconstruction and Philosophy, page 8. There is only too much reason to fear that the Western civilization, if not the whole world, is likely in the near future to go through a period of immense sorrow and suffering and pain. Bertrand Russell on the subject, if we are to survive this dark time, in the New York Times magazine, September 3rd, 1950, that was written, we have now arrived at the ultimate stage in history. What is immediately required of us is required of us now. It is very late. Perhaps nothing can save us, but the handwriting on the wall is plain enough. It says to the people of the earth, unite or die, Dr. Robert M. Hutchins. Everyone is agreed that an atomic war is world suicide, that no one can win. No scientist of the repute doubts the fact that every country with an industrial capacity will have the atomic bomb in 5 years. We therefore have just 5 years to build for peace. Dr. Robert M. Hutchins, Chancellor of Chicago University and Chicago Daily Tribune, March 26, 1946. There can be no doubt about the world crisis. We are living at one of those turning points of history which offers two roads, one of which leads to death and the other to life. The fact is that the H-bomb represents mankind's final suicidal triumph. The unlocking of the inmost secrets of nature for the purposes of the total destruction it brings into absolute focus the failure of a materialistic civilization which has sought to organize its life apart from Yahweh. G. Ashton Oldham, a former bishop of the Episcopal Diocese of Albany, on the world crisis and the future in the Bulletin of the Church Peace Union for June. People are discovering a frightful queerness has come into life. Even unobservant people are betraying by fits and starts a certain wonder, a shrinking fugitive sense that something is happening so that life will never quite be the same. Spread out and examine the pattern of events and you will find yourself face to face with a new scheme of using hitherto unimaginable by the human mind. Writers are convinced there is no way out, around, or through the impasse. It's the end. H.G. Wells, Los Angeles Examiner, October 21st, 1945. Yeah, if they dropped that H-bomb there in Hiroshima or Nagasaki, he said that, or maybe just right at the time he's going to do it. In the thoughtfully considered opinion of these eminent on the scene observers, this general is at the 0 hour of civilization, or this generation is at the 0 hour of the civilization. Whether we realize it or not, the day of the doom is shortening its shadow, and we are face to face with the most momentous issues ever to confront a generation of men. atomic warheads, lethal rockets, poison gas, bacterial bombs, submarines boring through the mighty deeps, and supersonic aircraft stabbing through space above. What means these and other dread devices of the destruction? What do these signs of the times portend for the Seventh-day Adventist Church and for all the world? Had the question flung itself at any generation in the days of the Yahweh's ancient prophet, then beyond doubt they would have answered. As the church lives, and as it is certain that Yahweh lives, it would be impossible that he leave his people in darkness concerning the signs of their times. And their answer must certainly be our answer, too. Moreover, it is a self-evident fact that if we want to know, Yahweh will enable us to know the true meaning of these unprecedentedly destructive things. From the outset, this must be clearly manifest. If the super bombs, super bombers, and super import nothing else, and the super all import nothing else, they, without question, threaten civilization. A faint idea of the devastating and demoralizing consequences of their use is to be gained from the scene of the aerial destruction depicted on the cover page. Manifest 2 is a certainty that heaven has permitted these instruments of the destruction to come in order to rouse Christendom, ministry, and laity alike to a concerted, enlightened, all-out action as the Yahshua leads. ahead to save man from himself and from the devil. Christianity failing this task and leaving the world to save itself as best it can, the enemy will ere long wipe out not only the knowledge of the Yahweh and of the salvation, but also civilization itself. Indeed, every open-eyed observer can distinctively see that while heaven and earth really wait upon Christians to take the offensive against all unrighteousness, the power of the evil is exerting an utterly sinister influence through the Christless men and women such as bear the red torch of communism. Grim indeed is the picture, and the stark peril of its hurls its challenge at Christendom as a whole. What shall we do about it? Close our eyes tight to it, or arise in the face of it and be Noah's, Gideon's, David's, Elijah's, Daniel's, Luther's, and all such with the faith to do something about it? While the light still shines and while opportunity still remains us, will we lay well to heart the tragic truth that the sin of the world's impenitence lies at the door of the Seventh-day Adventist Church? The Great Controversy 389. Will we all accept the supreme annunciation, glory to Yahweh in the highest, and on earth peace, goodwill toward men? Luke 2:14, as the supreme trust and duty of the church more than of the state, our country, and the whole world needs the Seventh-day Adventist church, and Yahweh is waiting for her members, both laity and ministry, to arise shine, Isaiah 60:1. Every Christian who truly knows that the preaching of the plan of salvation of the blood of the everlasting covenant of the Yahshua, Hebrews 10:19-20, so called the gospel, is the power of the Yahweh unto salvation, knows that if the masses were converted unto the Yahshua, there would not indeed, could not be any aggressive communistic or other totalitarian power in the world, and therefore no such threat as a militant communism now presents to the civilization. And every Christian also knows that there is no power on the earth other than the sword of the Spirit that can cut off the head of the Goliath of today. What pity then, and what recreancy cut off the head, recreancy to trust, should the church not immediately lift, should the Seventh-day Adventist church not immediately lift from the shoulders of the state her own neglected part, which is the greater part of the burden of the peacemaking, but continue to leave government to bear the whole load and to do the best it can without divine enlightenment and without power, which only the church, the Seventh-day Adventist church, can impart, and virtually pushing the Seventh-day Adventist church out of all communist-dominated countries, the enemy has already stolen a long and victorious march on her and is now fiercely fighting to extend his victory to the final triumph in pushing her from the very face of the earth. But there is yet hope, if only to every defender of the faith. If only she will, in the courageous loyalty, respond to the divine command and now ringing forth unto every defender of the faith in the blood of the everlasting covenant of the Yahshua, Hebrews 10. Arise, shine, for thy light is come, and the glory of the Yahshua is risen upon thee. For behold, the darkness shall cover the earth, and gross darkness the people. But the Yahshua shall arise upon thee, and his glory shall be seen upon thee, and the Gentiles shall come to thy light, and kings to the brightness of thy rising. Isaiah 61:3. In the power-crazed rule or ruin, war-bent and hell-bent, self-destructive course of the mankind, in the angry and catastrophic upheavals and outbreakings of the elements of nature, and in the accumulated fulfillment of the fast unfolding prophecies in the word of Yahweh, the signs of the times thunder the warning, appeal that we arise in Yahweh's light and make haste to rescue his people from the ills which threaten to devastate the world. If such is not the church's great mission, Okay, if such is not the Seventh-day Adventist Church's great mission and duty at this crisis hour, what need then do the Yeshua and the world have of her? But what can the Seventh-day Adventist Church do unless her members, both lay and clerical, arise together as one man and throw their all into the conflict? Well, knowing as we do the answer to these urgent questions, what excuse will we have if we do not now arouse ourselves and all saints in their Christendom, along with us, to do what the plan of salvation through the blood of the everlasting covenant of Yahshua, Hebrews 10, the gospel commands us to do, regardless how dramatic and impressive for any demonstration that the church may put on, it is no secret that even if she is not pushed out of any place or country, still at her present pace of preaching the plan of salvation of the brother everlasting covenant of Yahshua, Hebrews chapter 10, which is called the gospel of the kingdom. What kingdom? The kingdom of heaven here on earth that is set up first by the Seventh-day Adventist Church. A temporal millennium will not suffice her in which to warn the world, finish her work, and bring the kingdom in. And every enlightened mind knows it to be the inevitable truth. Just look at the brute predatory forces loose and lurking everywhere, and causing the whole earth to erupt with the violence, tumult, and terror. Verily, they are making men's hearts to fail of them for the fear and for the looking after those things which are coming on the earth. Luke 1:21-26. Will not all Christians everywhere be aroused by these things to put on the whole armor of the Yahweh and to take the sword of the Spirit, Ephesians 6:11-17, while following the Yahshua as he leads ahead? If not, then certain it is that the Seventh-day Adventist Church and the world as well are hopelessly doomed, to be sure. Though the few who do arouse to make the total surrender which the hour demands, Yahweh will save from the conflagration to come. How, though, shall he deliver anyone who fails to heed the signs of the time, the thunderings of the dread drums of the doomsday, now flashing in our eyes and not rumbling in our ears with a warning more awful than the flaming thunders of the Sinai? No, he could no more deliver such spiritually blind, deaf, and dumb incurables than he could have delivered the antediluvians who failed to go into Noah's Ark. And now, what do the flying saucers add to the already grim picture? Whether they are Earth-produced mechanisms or celestial interplanetary spaceships, they paint still a grimmer the picture of the sinner. One may be incredulous, another startled at the thought of heaven having flying saucers. But why? If Yahweh has given man knowledge to develop serial mechanisms, no one can reasonably suppose that heaven does not have incomparable superior ones. Let us not forget what covered a whole mountain in Elisha's day, 2 Kings 6:17. To be sure, Elisha called them chariots, but if they were not flying saucers of some type, how did they come to the earth? It matters not what one calls them, it's what they are and what they do that counts. Be they what they may, however, the signs around about us unmistakably warn that the thick black clouds the globe around are consolidating to pour down upon a shelterless world the most terrific storm since time began. To all who have an ear to hear and an eye to see, the signs of the times reveal that we are fast coming face to face with the time of the trouble such as never was, Daniel 12:1. To all who have an ear to hear and eyes to see, the signs of the times reveal that we are fast coming face to face with the time of the trouble, such as never was, Daniel 12:1. For a clear grasp of the terrible potential of the weapons now available can leave no doubt of the global peril in the picture. Every one of us knows that if the flying saucers are secret military weapons of the United States, then other nations besides ourselves will soon have them too, if they do not have them already. If so, what then can they be designed for but to snuff out lies, even the lies of the elect, if possible? And if the flying saucers are indeed the Yeshuas, then what else are they come for but to deliver everyone whose name is found written in the book, Daniel 12:1, and to stay to those who oppress them, Isaiah 66:16. Or if the archangels, or if perchance none of the heavens are yet come, still nothing is more certain than that the day hastens greatly when they will come. What is of the first and supreme importance to each, however, is to know for a surety that his name is written in the book. To have this most blessed assurance, one must first know what will keep one's name out of the book and what will put it in. One of the many things that will keep one's name out of the book of the Yahweh is one's turning a deaf ear to the Yahshua's warning that he who puts his short hand to the plow then looks back. He who starts in the gospel work then turns away from it is not fit for the kingdom. Luke 9:62. For the fact is that all who have graduated from the ministerial college have already put their hand to the plow. Will they now turn back? We devoutly hope not. To us Seventh-day Adventists, in the particular, the meaning of what we see around us should be window clear, making manifest that the time has now come for every Adventist church member to engage in the proclaiming of the three angels' messages. There are moreover thousands of the pastoral posts now waiting to be filled by both graduates and undergraduates of the Seventh-day Adventist Ministerial College. So let no one with such qualifications any longer be found either standing, idle, or engaging in a secular occupation while that serious work languishes and waits. At this very hour, millions without hope are waiting and withering away, perishing in the fields of sin and on the fields of battle, because no one has won them to Yahshua with the everlasting gospel. Who will go for them? Who has the vision, the heart, and the will to go out in the rescue of the humanity for the Yahshua? For all college graduates, undergraduates, and Bible workers who have the ability and the will to equip themselves for the work, both the opportunity for service and the means for upkeep and traveling expenses are ready and waiting. Hence, there are no grounds for, and I pray thee have me excused. Luke 14:18. Inspiration appeal. Arise and shine is to every soul. Will you not respond, brethren? Will you not earnestly pray for yourselves and for other laborers to help gather in the precious gold and grain? Or will you fail in this unforgiving responsibility and forfeit this most lofty privilege? For the issue is of the greatest gravity, Yahshua knew it would be, and in the supreme concern, he projected it in the crowning lesson of his parable of the vineyard. Now that time has come to the last parabolical hour, he has set the parable ablaze with the light, to be progressive as the truth itself is. Let us look deeper into the parable now, while the light of the Yahweh is turning on it. For the kingdom of the heaven is like unto a man that is an householder, which went out early in the morning to hire laborers into his vineyard. And when he had agreed with the laborers for a penny a day, he sent them into his vineyard. Let's read this paragraph over again. For the kingdom of the heaven is like unto a man that is an householder, which went out early in the morning for the hiring of the laborers into his vineyard, and he had to go into the marketplace to find them, because they weren't employed. And when he had agreed with the laborers for a penny a day, he sent them into his vineyard. And he went out about the third hour, and saw others standing idle in the marketplace, and said unto them, Go you also into the vineyard, and whatsoever is right I will give you. And they went their way. Again he went out about the sixth and ninth hour, and did likewise. And about the 11th hour he went out, and found others standing idle, and saith unto them, Why stand you here all the day idle? They say unto him, Because no man hath hired us. He saith unto them, Go ye also into the vineyard, and whatsoever is right, that shall ye receive. Matthew 20:1-7. How can we know for a certainty in which hour we find ourselves, and in our own call to service has come? We can know only by the establishing of the time in which the last parabolic hour expires. And to do this, we must first establish the time of the first call for service. Then, in turn, the time of each successive call, culminating with the last. First, though, pursuant to this end, we must bring into the focus of the parable significant points. Number one, the householder, as every Bible student should know, is the Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh himself. Number two, the laborers are his servants. Number three, the penny is a reward. Number four, his vineyard is the place where they are to labor. Five, the day is parabolical. Unrepenting, a period of time which is illuminated by some great light. Number six, the period of the labor is both preceded and succeeded by a night. Else there could be no early and no late part of the day. Number seven, the householder hires laborers at five different times. Number eight, there are 4 3-hour periods. Number nine, in each of the first three periods, only one group is hired. Number 10, in the fourth and last period of 3 hours, two groups are hired. Number 11, the agreement for a penny a day is made only with the first group. Number 12, the other groups are to receive whatsoever is right. Number 13, at the day's end, all are given the same pay, a penny, even though the last worked only 1 hour. 14, the first were paid last, the last was paid first. Now for the finding out in which hour we are told, go ye also, we must hear at the outset of this go to work study, determine where in time that the parable begins and where it ends. For the gaining of this vital knowledge is simply for the reckoning with the sequentially amplifying fact that the parabolical night that preceded the parabolical day must necessarily be the period before the spiritual light of the world with the Bible coming up with the Moses coming out of Egypt 1500 B.C., before the light of the Scriptures, the written word of Yahweh began to shine forth into the hearts of men. For back there it must be remembered, the will of Yahweh was transmitted not by the Bible, verily, orally, from the Father to the Son, just as the light of the sun at night is transmitted to the earth by the moon, rather than directly by the sun itself. For this reason, it has become regarded as a time of the oral tradition. But the day of the labor obviously represents the period in which the light of the world, the Bible itself, lightens man's path. Thus it is that in his parable, the master, the Yahshua of the vineyard, regards the old and the New Testament dispensation as the only day period of all probationary time, in which he goes to the marketplace five consecutive times for the hiring of the servants for the working in his vineyard. And Isaiah 5:7 says the vineyard of the Yahshua of the host is of the house of Israel, or is in the house of Israel. Finally, the night following the day can only represent the period after the plan of salvation, the brother everlasting covenant, the gospel work is finished, Hebrews 10:19-20, after probation for man's salvation is closed. Then, as the light of the world, the word of the Yahweh sinks beyond the horizon of the day, darkness covers the earth, and goes down with the people. Isaiah 60 verse 2. It is a time which finds the destiny of every being forever fixed, then follows the Yahshua's irrevocable finality. He that is unjust, let him be unjust still, and he which is filthy, let him be filthy still, and he that is righteous, let him be righteous still, and he that is holy, let him be holy still. Revelation 22:11. It is the time when men shall run to and fro for the seeking of the word of the Yahweh, and shall not find it. Amos 8:12. For the time when the unmindful of the master's call and of the impenitent of the sin realize and cry out in a frenzied and agonized despair. For the harvest is past and the summer is ended, and we are not saved. Jeremiah 20. For the truth has now become clear that the parable divides the time of the salvation into the two equal parts of the 20 symbolical hours, each the period before the Bible, the night, and the period during the Bible, the day, lending additional force to the fact that the parable thus divides time. Yahshua declares, are there not 12 hours in the day? John 11:9. If any man walk in the day, he stumbleth not, because he seeth the light of this world. Proceeding now, we come to another point of the special significance, where the first four groups were heard at the consecutive intervals, three parabolical hours apart, whereas the fifth, the last group, the one heard at the end of the 11th parabolic hour in 2002 at Kermit, Texas, Gilead Center, Brother Johnson at the helm, came only 2 instead of 3 hours later than the fourth group. And thus, that fourth group is the Seventh-day Adventist. So Brother Johnson, my minister from 1970 to 2003, he was the last of the fourth group, called at the ninth hour, 1844. I was the fifth of the fourth group that worked in the 11th parabolic hour with Brother Johnson for 33 years. But I continued on at the end of the 11th hour, being called to continue on to take Brother Johnson's place to open up the kingdom, the judgment of the living. Revelation 7 and 8 at the half hour silence, beginning the 12th parabolic hour. Only one parabolical hour, that's the 12th, before the day ends, shortly before probation closes. This 2 hour period from the 9th hour until the 11th hour is a singularity which comes as a climatic exception to the Master's pattern of the sequential and regular 3 hour intervals between calls. It obviously reveals that the last call comes unexpectedly and surprisingly within the period of the ninth hour group, the fourth group, from 1844 to 2002. Hence there are only 2 parabolical hours for the one group, the Seventh-day Adventist, called the ninth hour, and only 1 parabolical hour for the fifth group, Matthew 20 verse 6, the other group, called at the end of the 11th parabolic hour for the working in the 12th parabolic hour, the judgment of the living, closing out the judgment of the dead with the 9th parabolical hour call. To determine the identity of the laborers participating in each of the 5 different calls, we necessarily begin our quest with the servant of the first call, We have already seen that it is the Bible, the spiritual light of the world, that makes the parabolical day. We are now, moreover, we all know, moreover, that the Bible arrival with the Exodus movement, or arrived with the Exodus movement, also, since the arrival, the Assyrian never bargained, as it were, with another people, and that they were the only ones to whom he ever committed the ceremonial covenant and all their rewards and promises. Inescapably, therefore, the first group of the parable, those who went to labor early in the morning at the rising of the spiritual light, the Bible, and with whom the bargain was made to receive a penny a day, were ancient Israel as they were going out of Egypt. The time of which was early in the parabolical day, in the concord, the spirit of the prophecy declares, for the Jews had been first called into the Yahshua's vineyard. Yahshua's object lesson, page 400, by Ellen G. White. At that early hour, as the Yahweh began to indict the scripture, as the light that lightens the hearts of men began to rise, he remembered his covenant forever, the word which he commanded unto a thousand generations, which covenant he made with Abraham and his oath unto Isaac, and confirmed the same unto Jacob for a law and unto Israel for an everlasting covenant. Psalms 105, 8-10. Having thus by the first call for the servants solidly established the time in which the parabolical go-to-work call started, we are now to ascertain the call time and work period of the servants of the second call. For the second group, those sent at the third parabolical hour, must necessarily be the ones who were called to the work next. And they were of the early apostolics. Significantly enough, too, also, the Yahshua was crucified at the third hour of the day, Mark 15:25, and likewise, Pentecost came at the third hour of the day, Acts 2:15. Another point of the significance of which we should take note is the fact that the messages borne by these first two groups, by the ancient Israel with Moses and the children of Israel coming out of Egypt, and by the early apostolics with Peter and John and James and Paul and all of those, were not of a reformatory nature. They were not old forgotten truths in the process of revival and restoration. Rather, each was a new revelation, meet in due season, present truth, especially adapted fully to meet the needs of the people in their respective times. For the former group were inspired and commissioned for the teaching and practicing of the truth of the salvation through the blood of the everlasting covenant, Hebrews 10:19-20, as embodied in the ceremonial system. For the latter group were inspired and commissioned for the teaching and practicing of the same immutable truth in their advanced light, advanced from the typical unto the antitypical representation, from the ministration in the earthly tabernacle unto the ministration in the heavenly one, that is, from the sacrifice of a lamb of the flock unto the sacrifice of Yahshua himself, the Lamb of the Yahweh, the Father. Thus, the latter group taught they taught of the old truth in a new and original light. in the light of the gospel, which is the plan of salvation, the blood of the everlasting covenant, thou shalt, Hebrews chapter 10, 19 and 20. It says, was crucified for the remission of sin, resurrected in triumph over sin and death, and ascended for the making of the atonement and reconciliation for the penitent sinner, not in an earthly, but in a heavenly tabernacle. Since the messages of the first two groups, the one carried by the Exodus movement, and the other carried by the apostolics, antipodal apostolics, were each in their respective times fresh from glory. That fact logically establishes itself as a divine precedent and pattern for all of the messages of the parable. Accordingly, each of the three remaining groups must likewise be entrusted with a message of the new and distinctive revelation of the meat in due season, truth adapted especially and fully for the meeting of the needs of Yahweh's people at the time then present. Therefore, we need only to trace down through the annals of the church history the unfolding of the scroll, till we come upon a newly and originally revealed and proclaimed truth subsequent unto the message of the first advent of Yahshua. It must point out the servants of the third call, for the Protestant Reformation being purely an endeavor for the restoring of the old, downtrodden truths, and not for the revealing of the new advancement, had no new message of its own that had not already been taught in times past. It therefore follows that the third group and messages, our message, must be sought during the years following the Reformation. For the only revelation of the new prophetic truth subsequent unto the Reformation is the announcement of the year in which was to begin the work of the cleansing of the sanctuary, primarily in behalf of the dead, based on the Daniel 8:14, but not then fully understood, as its announcement was made by the first day Adventists. It necessarily follows that they were the third group of the servants with a new and distinctive message, and as is well known, they started proclaiming it in the year of 1833, the Millerites, announcing that the cleansing of the sanctuary was to commence in the year of 1844. Thus, in 1833, the clock of the parabolic time struck the hour of six. For the statement, again, he went out about the sixth and ninth hour, and did likewise, and is speaking of the two calls, not singly, as in the cases of the two preceding calls, but conjointly, shows that the sixth hour message and the seventh were to be closely related to and associated with the message and with the servants of the fourth call. And that was Ellen G. White and the Seventh-day Adventists in 1844. So it was that the sixth-hour group, the Millerites, and message, that of the first-day Adventists, and the ninth-hour group and message, that of the Seventh-day Adventists, fused into one because the message of the former was in itself divinely designed for the bringing the message of the latter to light. Moreover, as soon as the terminus of the prophetic 2300 days, Daniel 8:14, was reached in October 1844, just then Daniel 8:14, Daniel 7:9-10, Daniel 12:10 and 12, along with the Revelation 14:6-7, the first angel's message and his primary faith was first proclaimed by the Seventh-day Adventists, saying with a loud voice, "Fill Yahweh and give glory unto him, for the hour of his judgment is come. And worship him that made the heaven and earth and the sea and the fountains of the waters," Revelation 14:7. Thus the Seventh-day Adventists in 1844 began to proclaim what they termed as the investigative judgment of the dead, which in the Scriptures terms is the casting out of those who have not the wedding garment on, Matthew 22:11-13. For the shutting out of the five foolish virgins, Matthew 25:10. The dividing of the sheep and the goats, Matthew 25:32-33. The separating of the bad fish from the good fish, Matthew 13:48. Each of these are among the dead. Synonymously, they rightly understood it to be the antithetical day of the atonement, the day in which are removed from the books in the heaven the names of those who in the closing of their life's career failed to attain eligibility to come up in the first resurrection and the resurrection of the Holy One, Revelation 20:5-6. All these aspects are comprehended in the words, "Then shall the sanctuary be cleansed," and they considered that to be the 22nd day of October 1844, a 24-hour period. As the cleansing of the sanctuary on behalf of the dead is necessarily purely a book transaction, that is the reason for it taking place only in the heavenly sanctuary. Hence the names of the ineligible for the first resurrection and are screened from the names of the eligible ones, that heaven's books deal with all aspects of life, evident from Psalm 56:8, 69:28, 139:16, Daniel 12:1, Malachi 3:16, Philippians 4:3, Revelation 3:5, etc. Hence prophecy reveals that when the judgment was set, the books were opened, Daniel 7:10. And the judgment hour message is of a character, and importance as singular in all church history, also as it is the only prophetic message to sound subsequent to the sixth hour message, nothing can be more certain than that as it went forth in 1844, for the first time, Yahweh's parabolic timepiece then struck nine. Consequently, the ninth hour group in 1844 in the parable can be none other than the Seventh-day Adventists who were then on foot for the proclaiming that the judgment was set and the books were open, Daniel 7:10, and that anyone who then, during the antithetical day of the atonement, which is a 24-hour period that they consider to be on the 22nd day of October 1844, for the dead, should be found among the dead with his sins unconfessed, his soul not afflicted, and without the wedding garment on, would be cut off from among the people, Matthew 22:11-13, Leviticus 23:29. In brief, the message declares that the separation in the congregation of the dead had then begun. Now that for the first time the parable is ablaze with the light, none but the eye that is hopelessly gone out in the dungeon darkness can fail to see distinctly that the message with which we Seventh-day Adventists were entrusted in 1844 at the ninth hour is not the 11th hour message. that's entrusted. That's the closing of the judgment of the dead and the opening of the judgment of the living, 2002, is termination. Not the message of the judgment of the living, but rather only of the judgment of the dead. As prospective servants of the Yahweh, let each hearer at this focal point of the parable pause a moment to fix firmly in mind this all-important lesson as brought out in the following illustration. For the next decisive point of the truth is that the judgment of the dead was to be proclaimed to many peoples and nations and towns and kings. Revelation 10:11. Mark the word many. It never says, it never means all and never means every. Since this verse of the scripture foretells the expansion of the ninth hour group and message, it will highly repay each one carefully to examine what the Revelation 10:11 says on the subject. You dare not add unto the word nor subtract from it. Then compare it with the scriptures to follow, foretelling the expansion of the 11th hour group and message, and you will have the whole truth in the reference for the finishing of the word. Now that the time has finally come for Yahshua to recruit his 11th hour servant, that's at the end of the 11th hour, that came in 2002 at the Passover, this priceless parable is unfolded, and for the first time it is plainly seen that whereas the judgment of the dead was to be proclaimed unto many nations and people, the judgment of the living is to be proclaimed unto all nations and to every people on earth. Here is what inspiration itself says. And I saw another angel flying in the midst of the heaven, having the everlasting gospel for the preaching unto them that dwell on the earth, and unto every nation and kindred and tongue and people, saying with a loud voice, fear Yahweh, and give glory unto him, for the hour of his judgment is come, that's the judgment of the living, and worship him that made the heaven and the earth and the sea and the fountains of waters. Revelation 14:6-7. That the servants of the 11th hour are called, that's who we are now, the fifth group, Matthew 20, verse 6. Those who escaped, we came through the judgment at Kermit, Texas in 2002. We escaped the judgment there, are not cut off, Leviticus 23:29. While the house of the Yahweh is being judged, 1 Peter 4:17, the event which signalizes the commencement of the judgment of the living worldwide are to be sent unto all nations. Inspiration attests, though, the prophet Isaiah, for behold, Yahshua will come with the fire and with the chariots like a whirlwind to render his anger with the fury and his rebuke with the flames of the fire, for by the fire and by his sword will the Yahshua plead with all flesh and the slain of the Yahshua. This brings the end of our study this hour. Contact us at the 11th hour call, number 11. Click on the audio archive to hear this message, and we're going to close now with a song.